For Thomas Matters Radio, episode 41, this is Mark Collier. Sponsor today, Omega Processing Solutions. Did you know that they were recently, Omega Processing Solutions was recently again selected by the Cincinnati Business Courier as a finalist for the 2016 Fast 55? The awards recognize Greater Cincinnati's region's 55 fastest growing private companies, and hey, they are in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. They've also made that list 6 times since 2007. 2016 actually marks the 12th year that the Business Courier has presented its Fast 55 awards. So half of the times that they've actually had these awards in place, Fort Thomas-based Omega Processing Solutions has been a part of that. That is a big-time honor. And thank you so much to Omega Processing Solutions. If you're a small business owner, you've got to be talking to them about how to make sure that you are providing your customers the easiest way to pay you. So you can call them 442-8100, 859-442-8100, toll free 866-888-9724, 866-888-9724. Smack dab in the middle of the podcast series with the Fort Thomas City Council candidates and incumbents. Today we're going to be talking to incumbent Roger Peterman. Let's go. So we have Roger Peterman in the Fort Thomas Matters podcast studio for the second time today. Roger is a, not today, second time in totality Roger's been here. Roger talked to us in 2014 when he was running for city council. At that time, you are now a 7-time incumbent. Is that right?
I think that's right. I think it'll be 16 years at the end of this term that I've been on city council.
Institutional knowledge is the name of the game today. So Roger has an op-ed that he's written for FortThomasMatters.com. You can find that at the 2016 tab, election coverage tab at the top of FortThomasMatters.com. We put a little bit of a snippet into the May or the April edition of the Fort Thomas Living. But if you haven't read either of those, Roger, give me about a minute who you are, what you do, and why you're running.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Mark. I appreciate having the opportunity to be on here and connect with people that would be listening to this and obviously are engaged in activities in Fort Thomas, and that's one of the points that I've made that I've learned over the years and really appreciate about this community is that people are engaged. They feel that they're a part of Fort Thomas. They're willing to get involved in improving this community, making it a great, not making it a great community. It is a great community.
It is,
But, you know, a great community can always be made better.
Sure.
And we have so many great people involved in doing that. That's one thing I really like, really appreciate about Fort Thomas and living here. So about me, I'm an attorney, work in the municipal finance area. So my background really is in financial matters. And have a wife and 3 children and now 4 grandchildren. All 3 children went through the Fort Thomas schools. My wife is also very active in the community. She's on the Brighton Center board, for example. So it's just been a lifestyle, I think, for us. And that's the reason I'm involved in the Fort Thomas City Council.
So one of the things that, and I try to run a common theme through all of these podcasts, and one of the things that I think is interesting for our listeners to hear is how I became familiar with each individual candidate. So I remember about Roger Peterman, when I was little, we went to the same church at the Highland United Methodist Church. And I remember Roger being on the softball team at that point. And I used to think Roger was so cool because Roger, there was only a couple people that could hit home runs when I was little, and I thought that was cool. It was Roger Peterman and Jeff Tice. Jeff Tice
That's
could
right.
hit the home run. So I felt like that was how I first became introduced to Roger Peterman. I thought that was fun.
Now that is good. In fact, I should have put that in my information. One year we did actually win the Church League
That's a big
Championship,
deal in
and
Fort
I know
Thomas.
I should have put that in there, and I forgot. But unfortunately, when I ran for city council, the city council meetings were on the same night as the softball games, so that's sort of in the past. Plus,
Well, you got some pull now. Get
I
those things moved.
know. But anyway, so that's you're right. That's just part of Fort Thomas. That's the way this city is. Exactly.
So, what I want to do is talk about some of the op-ed differences that you maybe wrote for us in 2014, 2016. A lot of things, and the incumbents that did both of those. Not a lot has changed, obviously. We're still moving in a positive direction, but your main thing that you said was, my goal hasn't changed. I'm reading now. I merely ask people to consider whether Fort Thomas has been a better community over the last 12 years. You seem to cite institutional knowledge. Obviously, you're the longest serving council person now at 16 years. You've dedicated your work in public finance. You've become an expert in that field. Now you're the chairman of the Public Safety Committee. So I guess all of those things wrapped up, why are we running again?
It's a great question that I ask myself. I've been doing this a long time, and I feel like a lot of the reasons I ran for council, a lot of those goals have been accomplished. But when Mayor Brown retired and Mayor Haas took office, he reminded me of what I'd been saying before, that we've come to a different level, but we can yet go to the next level. And in fact, as a part of that, when I first came into office, the city was actually just starting into a sort of a planning, strategic planning process of looking to where the city needed to go, looking at what was going on in other communities, where we could improve, and the result of that was, all the streetscape improvements, the parks improvements and so forth, all were part of that strategic started, I should say, with that strategic planning process. Well, Mayor Haas wants to start that again. And so that starts with community engagement, direct engagement of what people see as the future of the city, what the needs are in the city. And that got me interested in continuing to serve, bringing that background information from what happened before. And projecting that into where we can go into the future. So that's really part of it. And I would ask anybody listening to this, to become engaged. We really need to know what people are thinking and know where the, what next level we can bring this city to in terms of I guess the word that people use are livability. And I'm still interested in that.
So you're going to be the first person on the to sign up to run the zip line?
Yeah, so
Is that you?
yeah, no, I mean, I if you know if people want, I mean, I think these are the amenities. These are the things that are one of the again one of the very recent encouraging things is the well, I can't remember their exact name, but there's a trail bike organization
Cora.
that cor Corba,
Yeah,
yeah,
Cora. Yeah.
Cora,
Yeah.
Cora, right. That is going to take over maintenance of the trail bikes. Now, the trails that the trail bikes use. Now, I'll have to admit, I'm not that kind of person. I don't have a trail bike. I don't ride those trails.
Right.
But hey, what a great asset, and what a commitment from a group to help us maintain
People
those.
are excited about that.
Yeah, I mean that's just fabulous. And there's, over and over again, there are examples of how, citizens, in this case, even to a certain extent, people outside Fort Thomas are willing to pitch in and, make sure that these community assets are available, to use. So,
Let's talk about some of your involvement on some other boards, because I think those can give us some insights to, you know, some of the projects that we're maybe talking about. So like South Bank.
Right.
So let's talk about your involvement with South Bank and what that means for Fort Thomas.
Yes, I have been, South Bank was originally formed when actually the Northern Kentucky Convention Center was built, and the thought, so that's quite a while ago, the thought of needing amenities for conventioneers. And it's evolved since then to the main project now is called Riverfront Commons. And I'll, you know, my vision for Fort Thomas, people may not be aware of this, but Fort Thomas has more riverfront property than any other community in greater Cincinnati.
Right.
And my vision for that is that eventually we connect to the Riverfront Commons Trail that will go then just downstream to Dayton, Bellevue, into Newport. parts of it are built, a lot, they're not really connected, but that eventually that trail terminates up in Tower Park in the Midway Business District. And so that's the kind of development that South Bank is.
And we provide, talk about the relationship between South Bank Partners and Fort Thomas. Is there a monetary, incentive to go back and forth, or is it simply, you know, they're helping us with our overall visioning and strategy to connect?
Yeah, so all these things require money to operate, and that's the most difficult thing is getting operating funds. So Fort Thomas has partnered with the other, what we refer to as river cities, again, including Dayton, Bellevue, Newport, Covington, and Ludlow, to provide financial support. Ours is, you know, relatively minor in that regard. Most of it's Newport and Bellevue, but we want to be a part of the team. I mean, that's how I think we need to look at this. I mean, that's my, you know, this is a community. We're part of that community, and the Fort Thomas City Council has always been supportive of that. And I think that's a great statement for this city to be partnering with the other cities in this area.
So, and you're also on the Port Authority Board. What other boards are you a part of?
Well, the one that I've been asked to serve on recently is St. Elizabeth Hospital. And when you ask me about, the connection to your other boards, there is going to be a movement that's going to be led by St. Elizabeth and to a certain extent Skyward, which is a community visioning group, toward a healthy community approach to, or a population health approach, if you want to use a more technical term, to health. And I'm hesitant to say health care because it's beyond that. I can tell you, and this may not be that public of information yet, but St. Elizabeth has been going through its own strategic planning, and we just adopted a strategic plan that sort of flips healthcare on its head. Right now, all the incentives built in healthcare are to get people to come in, use healthcare services, and get paid for those services.
Right, sure.
We think, and we've been working with some very high-level sophisticated consultants on this, that those incentives have to be flipped, and that we have to encourage people to have healthy lifestyles, to have health outside of the healthcare system, to have a healthy community, a healthy population, and to reduce, therefore incentivize people not to come in and use healthcare services, to have them engaged in behaviors and activities that will be a healthy lifestyle and therefore reduce healthcare costs. So that's the strategy that healthcare.
It's kind of a crazy thing because, you know, as a healthcare provider, which St. E is, it's the largest one in Northern Kentucky, to say, we don't want you to come in here. That's kind of like a novel concept. Yeah.
Right. And our consultants have, you know, described that there's, you know, a financial impact of that. And you know, it's literally charted out over a 10-year period as to what the revenue impact would be. Now, at the end of the day, the idea is that the healthcare providers will be taking the risk.
Sure.
On the lives of the, so we think at the end of the day, it's going to be a team effort based both community and individual responsibility for your health. And so that deals with, you know, all kinds of issues, including right now, the heroin epidemic. And that, I'll tell you, that's going to have, that is already having a tremendous impact on the cost of healthcare in this community, because, you know, the cost of dealing with heroin overdoses, is a healthcare issue. The
hepatitis C,
the spread of hepatitis C,
HIV,
tremendous cost that shows up in both what we end up paying in Medicaid dollars that go in Medicaid, and that's your state taxes, and what you pay for your health insurance. That's all factored into the cost of healthcare in this community. We need to push back on that, and I'll tell you, St. Ys is extremely active in trying to deal with the heroin epidemic, even though there's no financial reward for that. We're looking long term and what the cost is going to be to this community to deal with heroin and heroin related things like hepatitis C.
So, and this is good timing. Yesterday, the fiscal court, the Campbell County Fiscal Court, had it on their agenda to talk about needle exchange. And, you know, there was some, Kenton County had adopted, I think, a mobile needle exchange. There's some philosophical differences on, you know, what should we be offering these types of things. Healthcare officials are saying, absolutely, yes, we should. I kind of fall in that camp where, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's a philosophical deal. I think it's one of those things where if the healthcare community is telling us that we need these needle exchanges, they're the ones studying these types of things, that's who we should be listening to.
No, that's right, Mark. The sort of the initial reaction to that is, well, you're just enabling drug users to do drugs. What I've learned is that heroin is so highly addictive. Whether or not you have a clean needle makes no difference at all. You know, heroin users apparently become desperate, you know, to continue to get fixes, as they call it. And that's a huge health problem in this community, but it's also a law enforcement problem. And I will say, in fact, Officer Sergeant Chris Goshorn was at the hearing last night. And I'll tell you that Monday morning there was another, or Tuesday morning, there was another heroin-related event, and he was there at that. And that really speaks well for, I think, for our police force, because, you know, they don't have to do this kind of thing. They don't have to be proactive, but they are being proactive. They're recognizing, and I'll tell you what, you hear this over and over again. I've heard it with Covington police officers, Newport. You cannot arrest your way out of this problem. You have to be more proactive. Well, we can't deal with that in terms of needle exchange. The only thing that we're trying to do with that is stop the spread of HIV and hepatitis C. And if you saw a map, people should, I don't even know where it's available. It's spreading like wildfire in this community. And the cost for treatment of hepatitis C, which is treatable, is $90,000.
Yeah. I mean, just the, if you're going to look at it from a selfish standpoint, is why should I care about that? That statistic, that's why you should care about it.
Exactly.
From a purely selfish standpoint, not let alone take healthcare out of it. That,
right.
The financial aspect of this is crazy.
And that gets passed through, $90,000. So, and I'm using very round numbers, but there were 100 people, which is, you know, our capacity at St. Elizabeth in mental health with heroin addiction that were tested positive for hepatitis C.
So right here.
Right here in Northern Kentucky. So, and these are very rough numbers.
Sure.
But just for ease of understanding, 100 people times $90,000 is $9 million in healthcare costs just to treat those people.
And we're not talking about statewide here. We're talking about in Northern Kentucky.
Yeah, in the St. E's system.
So were you there last night at fiscal court?
I was.
Give us a little insight as to what happened and what was discussed.
Well, I couldn't stay for the whole thing because I had to get home and babysit grandchildren. However, there were a lot of presentations on all the activities that are going on in dealing with the addiction problem. Very, very difficult thing to deal with. The fiscal court is facing an issue as to whether or not to approve a needle exchange. And that's the same with the Newport City Commission. Because both of them have to approve it.
Right. It's got to be the county level and then the city level. And then I think then you get some state allocated funds if
right.
it goes through those two.
And so there is money out there to pay for these needles. And so there was I don't know if they actually spoke at the meeting. There was an email sent around talking about enabling addicts and that Saney would make money on this. It's just the opposite. I mean, Saney not only doesn't make it, actually, you know, I suppose there, if you're on the provider side and you want people to get sick and come in and pay you money to help cure them, yeah, Saney could make money that way. That's not what we want. We want people not to get hepatitis C, not to put the population at risk. Our police officers search cars when they pull them over. They can get stuck with needles.
Did you read the first person op-ed by your fellow councilman Jeff Beazle when he did a ride along with Sergeant Goshorn?
Yeah,
I mean that's scary stuff.
Oh, it is. And Saney's is providing gloves so the officers won't get stuck. They're funding half of an initiative on addiction to treat addicts, at the jail level. Campbell County jailer doing some very creative
Jim things. Daly.
Jim Daly. And in Kenton County, they're already doing some of those things, leading edge things. We have to deal with this addiction, but I'll tell you, and it's very difficult to do, but when I heard the first presentation on this, the one immediate payoff that was obvious was needle exchange. You do needle exchange, and in some areas it's proven that hepatitis C rates go way down, and they're out of control here in Northern Kentucky right now.
So, and just to give a quick recap, I don't think there was a vote taken last night.
No.
But this is the way I've heard it's leaning. So Judge Executive Steve Pendry is pro-needle exchange. Commissioner Charlie Coleman is against. Former City Councilman Tom Lampe is leaning for. And Brian Painter is the kind of the deciding vote on this, whether he'll go either way. They need two of those three commissioners to vote to take it into Campbell County. My gut feeling is that they probably will. And at that point, we'll need to decide where in Campbell County. It's not going to go in Fort Thomas.
No. And actually, you know, I've been involved with this for a while. It needs to go at the health district offices because
in Newport,
which is actually in the county building. And I applaud Judge Pendry for this. And his position is, you know, a lot of these people are already using those health district services. So the fact that they're going and get needles, nobody will notice.
Right.
And I think versus
a
right.
versus a mobile unit that's kind of put out in a clandestine area. When right. you walk in there, you know exactly what they're doing.
Right. And believe it or not, And also, if you limit hours on when people can go in, it's a real problem because there are a lot of doctors on the St. Elizabeth board, and to hear the stories that they tell about average people, I mean, people that are holding middle-class jobs that have become addicted to heroin, is those are sad stories. Well, people can't, you know, take off work and get clean needles if it's made very difficult for them to do that. I mean, it can sound like enabling, but I'll tell you, we're just trying to stop the spread.
You've got to do something differently because the things that we're doing right now, you can't, to your point, you can't arrest your way out of it. The only thing that you can do to throw money at it is for more beds, and that doesn't happen overnight.
No, in fact, St. Elizabeth is building almost a 200-bed a facility to deal with mental health generally, but addiction obviously is a mental health problem.
All these beds are, I mean, you're talking about Transitions, you're talking about Brighton Center, there's some at the jails. You can't get a bed.
No, and that was one of the things that was said, Mark, last night, was that these jails are overflowing. In fact, one of the officers said, you know, we pull people over and they have to almost treat it like an alcohol situation, that if they've got somebody to take them home, they'll let them go home, even though may have been caught with contraband, right, with heroin, because there's no room in the jails to house these people. I mean, it's an incredible problem.
Well, and obviously we've gotten off on a little bit of a tangent. This is I think the most important issue that Northern Kentucky deals with, Fort Thomas has these issues as well, but we're not as affected because the needle exchange is not going to go into Fort Thomas. We have some of our constituents that have been affected by this. Obviously, there's no barriers to who this type of thing affects. Let's transition a little bit away to what's an issue in Fort Thomas. We have good problems here, right? So we don't have a lot of space for new businesses to come in because our economic vibrancy is doing very well. Our park system is outstanding. We have good problems here. What's something that you want to work on in the next 2 years if you're elected?
Well, I think two things. I've been very consistent about this, that we have to continue to support the schools. And I'll tell you what, it's great to drive by that high school and see how it's – I can't wait till they get
it all cleaned up. It's a college campus now.
It's gorgeous, and it used to be not very nice.
When Lizzie and I and, yeah. and Tino were – and Rob were there, we used to want to be in the trailers on the in the front lawn because they were AC.
But now makes a great statement for the community. So what an image booster that is.
Sure.
Just that. But so want to continue to do that. But the other thing is to support small businesses. I mean, it's great to be able to go to Fort Thomas Coffee, which I did before I came over to this, and have a coffee right in the middle of town with some friends to go you know, to the 15 North and have a good craft beer or a great pizza. The 915, have a great fish sandwich. You know, things like that. And I have to give compliments to Debbie Buckley. She's just doing such a fantastic job. I don't know if people know her name, but she has been, you know, a bulldog in promoting business and getting things going in the Fort Thomas community, and things that the city can do, like merchants and music that support Fort Thomas. So I want to see that continue, and if again we can take that to a different level, we can help these businesses go. D. Stewart, we just had a ribbon cutting with his spice business. So if we can help business in that way, that's a very important thing for this community.
So let me get through some of the common theme questions. I know we spent a lot of time on some of the issues that the region is dealing with, and I think it's important that it's coming from you because you're on some leadership boards and you have some insight that not a lot of our other council people would have. But I want to get back to some questions that I'm asking everybody. So number one, and you're a good person for this because you've been chair of the finance committee for a long time. It's your profession. You understand it. The street tax, it's an assessment that is split amongst homeowners with frontage, and it comes from the road aid fund too. There's two mechanisms there. We have in the past looked at different funding mechanisms. Fort Thomas is in the minority of the way that we do it, but you know, our streets look good. That's one argument. When does it become a point to where we look at something else? And I know that Mayor Haas had said, you know, in his when that question is asked, he says we had somebody come in one time with Excel sheets and he was a math whiz and he looked at all the different ways to fund these things and found that the way that we do it is the best way. How do you come down on this? You have some obviously some expert opinion on
right.
this.
So if you go through Fort Thomas, first of all, we probably have more sidewalks than any other community. And that's one thing you hear about outside from outsiders is they can't believe how many people they see out walking.
John Mueller said yesterday when I was doing this that was the main reason he moved here was the sidewalks.
Okay, so there you go. And I mean, it really is true, especially this time of year. So you know, that's an asset that really has to be maintained. In addition to the streets, it's interesting that you ask that because we do have the best streets. I mean, there's no question, streets and sidewalks. And I've talked to a lot of other mayors, city council members around Northern Kentucky, and I said, you know, this is the best program ever. We really have great streets in Fort Thomas, and I've asked them about that. And other cities used to fund things this way. But I'll tell you what, there are cities now that we're working with that have to borrow money because they didn't have a system of maintaining their streets on an ongoing basis like this. And their streets have deteriorated so badly that they're spending literally millions of dollars and having to borrow the money to do that. Well, of course, they have to pay that back out of their tax base. I think that the system that we have, it is clearly a benefit to the owner of the house to have their streets improved, maintained. But it's also a benefit to the community. And sort of the 50-50 approach to it, I think, is something that's proven and really has created a situation where we do have the best streets.
So you've talked to some leaders, probably mayors and city council in other cities. Do you think that this model, do you think that that model would work in those other cities? Another way to ask the question, because it would be a new way to assess tax owners, they're not used to this type of thing. Do you think their residents would allow this to happen?
I mean, that's a great question. I think it's the mirror image of what we have in Fort Thomas, right? I think it would be very difficult because people, you know, it can be a lump sum of money that's, you know, pretty substantial, although the asset lasts for years. So, you know, if you look at it over time, but I think it's very difficult for them to implement it. On the other hand, in Fort Thomas, it makes it more difficult to change it because lots of people have already paid those assessments, and they may only be into the second, third, fourth, or fifth year of an asset that lasts at least 10 years. And so I think in Fort Thomas, they wouldn't think it's fair that we've changed the system when they've already paid for their own street improvements.
So my bill was due last year, so I got to stay here for 20 years and then I can move.
To enjoy it. No, but when you sell your house,
right.
It's interesting. Jeff Earlywine, just to go back a little way, said this.
Former city administrator.
Right, former city administrator, that he said it's really interesting to see whenever we do a street that generates improvements that people do to their houses. They may paint it, do some facade.
Well, how about right around here?
Exactly.
I mean, we've got two right across the street that did really well.
Yeah.
We've got the one right on the corner of Donnelly and North Fort Thomas that's added almost – looks like another house on there.
Right.
So maybe there's something to that. I mean, there's a lot of street improvements right around this area where we're sitting right now that it was on a street assessment road that got a new road, and now they almost have three new houses.
Right, and people inquire, this just happened at the council meeting, they'll inquire the city manager whether or not they can have the contractor do their driveway at the same time.
I actually had the contractor do my driveway.
So, of course, the city can't pay for that, but so that's a nice improvement in and of itself and an opportunity. So, yeah.
Here's a good question for you as well, as being a longtime city council person and having a lot of experience. Were you on council when Jeff Earlywine was there?
Yeah.
So you've been through three city administrators now.
That's right.
Yeah. So leave Jeff out because that was, you know, a long ways, not a long ways ago, but for my sake, it was. So you had Don Martin. Now we have Ron Dill. Talk about the differences in leadership style between Don Martin and Ron Dill.
Ron is pretty new at it. So it's, a little bit hard to gauge, but Ron has been there for a very long time and knows everything that's going on in Fort Thomas. He was on the Education Foundation, so he's been very involved with the schools. Don actually didn't live here, but Don was very professional. I think he had a master's in public administration. Very good at, carrying out, whatever the city council asked him to do that. I think that's going to be true of Ron as well. In fact, Ron has proposed streamlining, city's, management once again, which was actually adopted at the council meeting this week.
So city he'll have an assistant city administrator, which would be Joe Ewald, who is currently the director of finance.
Yeah.
We have a new general services director, which is one and the same of our zoning administrator, who is Kevin Barbian. And was this a new position that was created for Tim Mattingly? Tim Mattingly used to be the general services foreman. Now he's like a supervisor or something
right.
like that.
Right. So similar responsibilities, but at a higher level, more management responsibilities. So, you know, Ron, I guess just with having, I guess himself actually, worked in each of those roles, was able to see some efficiencies that he thought would work. And so, you know, I think that's really what Ron can bring to the table as well, just that wealth of experience that really can move us on forward.
So, and you've obviously been through the change of, you know, two meetings a month to now we're down to one meeting a month, except for, you know, the two budgetary months during the fiscal year. Do you see a marginal difference in how business is conducted? Is one meeting a month enough to get everything done?
I think it is, because we also have committees, and really, it's probably accurate to say most of the work is done at the committee level. So those committees meet also. So when we need to hire a police officer, you know, the committee will interview and make the recommendations. When we have to develop a budget, the finance committee will meet and you know, help develop that budget with staff. So when it gets to the city council, that all that's been vetted and the city council meetings are, you know, not a formality really, but not as intense as the committee meetings.
Not a lot of discussion is happening there. There's not a lot of dissension ever. Generally, a lot of the votes pretty much are unanimous, which
right.
I have found in my dealings with other cities, and obviously I don't cover the other cities like I cover Fort Thomas, but there's a lot more discussion. There's a lot more dissension. There's a lot more uniformity at Fort Thomas. Is that by design?
Well, I would have to say it's been that way ever since I've been on city council, which, you know, I've learned shouldn't be taken for granted. As you said, that's right. Not true in a lot of city commissions. But I think, you know, people we have had a vision on the city council of what we want the city to be like. And we have had some varied experiences on city council that have been, you know, excellent and input from everybody. And even though people aren't on every committee, they certainly, you know, provide their input that's used in these committees. And so I think it's the structure that's used, good city managers that we've had, back to the earlier question, and people taking the time to sit down and think strategically and be on the same page that have allowed us to do that.
So one of the questions that I'm, again, stringing through the whole podcast series that we're doing, again, sponsored by Omega Processing Solutions, is I feel like there's certain things that each council member should do at a bare minimum. I think good city council people will be very proactive. They'll have leadership positions like you do in you know, throughout the community, to be able to be a better soundboard, to bring more experience in. One of the other things I think is a bare minimum is attendance. So I'm asking all of the city council people, if you're elected, taking office in January 1 of 2017, barring unforeseen emergencies, would you pledge to be at every city council meeting?
Well, you know, when you make pledges, you never know what circumstances might arise, right? So I wouldn't say it's a pledge, but I can tell you that having done this for 16 years, I'll plan anything out of town around the time of city council meetings so that I can be sure to attend. I don't have 100% attendance, but I'm you know, I know it's very strong, and that's more important now that we have just one meeting a month. But,
sure.
But the committee meetings too, I think that is, you know, as critical to participate in the committee meetings. And there's a little more flexibility there because it's not as many people, and you can schedule around
right.
People's conflicts.
There's three people on each committee versus six in the
right.
and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
This is a question I'm also stringing through, and yours is going to be a little bit different because you've been on for so long. Set aside your wife and your family. Who do you talk to each time that you decide to run? A lot of the questions that I'm asking some of the newer people, obviously, is a little bit different because, you know, they want a soundboard, some residents in Fort Thomas. Do you think this is a good idea if I run? Obviously, you've run for seven times now. Who are maybe some of the people that you ask for advice? Should I do this again?
Well, you know, as you said, obviously the family, but in this case, I would have to say Mayor Haas too. And he, you know, encouraged me. I hope he doesn't mind me saying this. he hasn't given me any endorsement, so don't take it that way.
right.
However, you know, he said, look, I'm going to be mayor and I need some experience on this council because we have so many new members. And so, you know, and I think he's doing a great job. As I thought he would, and he's proven that to be so. And I think people see that over the next couple of years. So, you know, so that's a part of it, really, just looking to the insiders as to where things might go. That's probably the primary other source. But, you know, I've had friends that have encouraged me,
sure,
to, you know, and been complimentary of what city council has been able to accomplish.
20 seconds. You and I are in an elevator together. We don't know each other. I'm a constituent of yours. You want my vote. What do you say? Go.
I would say that we do have a lot of new members on the city council, and that the city is on a great trajectory with all the things that have been done to improve the appearance of the community and the livability, and particularly in the park system, and whatever support we can give to schools, which has been substantial, and that we now need to go to a different level, but we need that background and experience to move us to that level. So that's why I'd like your support.
Roger Peterman, you can see his op-ed again on the 2016 election coverage tab at the top of FortThomasMatters.com. Roger, thanks so much for being on the show.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for doing this.